Hello and welcome to the RTÉ Olympics podcast. Mikey Stafford here. I've been joined by Tim Harnady to reflect on today's rowing, another glorious day on the water, and look ahead to tomorrow, which could be trebly times glorious. And isn't it great, Tim? Rowing, you're under your own steam. You don't need to rely on that pernicious wind to blow you around like the poor sailors today who twice tried to get their medal race done, but no joy. Sailing's never a sport for you, no? You prefer to work under your own steam?
I think I did a sailing course when I was a young lad, a couple of years down in Baltimore near Skibbereen, but it wasn't for me. Wasn't very good at it, so took up the rowing then.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, and the boxers are having their trouble with the judges as well. I think, can we say rowing's a pretty pure sport where the outcome, you know, you can predict it before it even happens, isn't that right? Oh wait, no, you can't, because Tim. I couldn't let you go.
Tim. For it. I deserve it in fairness, so I leave that one go.
Yeah, Tim was on TV this morning, and he left a van. Nick Quillen, in no doubt, that Philip Doyle and Darragh Lynch were favourites for gold. And in fairness, they won a bronze and the first ever medal for Ireland in heavyweight rowing. But they were third behind the second place Netherlands, who were seen, weren't they really, Tim, as the contenders for the gold. But on the outside were the Romanians, who, as you said, they wouldn't even be in the final if the Serbians hadn't practically sunk in the last couple of 100 metres. And they came from nowhere to win the whole thing.
Yeah, that was a big surprise this morning. And I think Dara referenced it as well in his interview after the race that, you know, if you look back, I haven't seen anything like that in an Olympic or World Championship or any major championship semi-final. The Serbians were in a qualifying place till 4 or 5 strokes out, and the stroke man literally stopped rowing. I assume he was just spent, and the Romanians, as Dara put it, were gifted a place in the final, and then went down to lead the final and win it fairly convincingly, which is a big surprise. And whatever about us and me thinking the lads were going to win a gold this week, the Dutch would have been expecting from the World Championships last year to be winning that. They've been dominant from the World Championships last year in all the World Cups. You know, they look really, really good. So they'll be very disappointed even not to have won. But look, we got a medal, and that's an absolutely brilliant result. So I don't want to be letting my predictions or incorrect predictions put any sort of a cloud on it, which I'm sure they won't, you know.
No, look, sure, we have to. It's part of the fun of it is making a call on it. And look, what I like about you, Tim, is you do it with gusto. You don't, you're not mealy-mouthed. You get in there and you tell people what's going to happen, and whether it happens or not, yeah, isn't your problem.
it is now.
Philip Doyle was pretty hard on himself in his interview afterwards, said he made a big mistake. He kind of started to sprint too early, and he was talking about Dara's legs going down to finish because they started sprinting too early. And you were saying afterwards you thought he's maybe been a bit harsh on himself. Have you rewatched it or looked at that and had to think about it?
I did. I didn't spot it first time around because I was more looking at the positions of the boat as opposed to looking in any particular boat as to what's going on. But I'm sure that wouldn't have changed the result. I guess the way that could have been a difficulty is if they had lost bronze because of that, but they were, you know, they were far enough ahead of the US. It's funny, actually, you'd always notice this. Well, I would have always noticed when you're rowing, stuff that feels like big events in the boat are actually not even noticeable outside. You know, someone was coaching me before and they said, in terms of making a change to your technique, what feels like an absolutely massive change to you will barely be noticeable to someone outside the boat. So he will have felt like that was a very big thing, I'm sure, to bring it up. But I'd say if he hadn't brought it up, no one would have noticed, and it didn't make any difference to the result. So he can sleep easy. He can sleep easy tonight.
Well, he seemed to be in the welcome position to be able to criticize himself for a mistake he thinks he made, while also being absolutely delighted with the result. And, you know, you can say there was a chance for gold there, but it was a first ever heavyweight medal for Ireland in Olympic rowing. That's huge. And that's something that there hasn't really been a threat of even previously. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Men's heavyweight, I suppose we should say, because I've seen a few people being attacked today for not forgetting. And I know you haven't forgotten because we've spoken about it on the last occasion about the women's four winning the last time. But I wouldn't say it's going back a while. In the late 70s, Sean Dre of Neptune Rowing Club had a silver medal at the World Championships. And funny enough, I spoke to a kayaker who was at those Olympics in whatever year it was. It was 76, must have been 80, 78, whatever they were. And there was the consensus at the time that Sean Dre was good enough to win a medal and unfortunately didn't. Now, obviously, I wasn't around then. I wasn't alive then. But he was threatening back then. And then we had some good heavyweight crews. We had a four men's four in 2008 in Beijing. But for the last while, I suppose, the Tokyo Olympics, Phil, who's in the boat today, obviously, and Ronan Byrne were a threat for winning a medal. Mm. They had won a silver medal the year before the Olympics was cancelled. So, yeah, traditionally, Ireland has been very strong in lightweight rowing, and that's where we got our first Olympic medal. But it's always where, over the years, Sydney, Athens, Beijing even, we would have been looking to get our first medal. I always thought it would be in lightweight rowing, and it was in lightweight rowing, but it looks like the heavyweights have taken over now. And funnily enough, that's a good thing because lightweight rowing is gone. So if we were relying on our lightweights now, we wouldn't have much to pick. Well, there'd be none there at the next Olympics, you know, but the heavyweight Irish team now is, well, the team is mainly made up of heavyweights.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's good because maybe the contingency plan a few years ago might have been to sellotape Paul and Fintan together and put them in the heavyweight class. But now we don't need to do that now. We've got heavyweight rowers, which is great. Looking ahead to tomorrow then, and those aforementioned lightweights, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy in the last Olympic final for at least 8 years anyway in this class, because it's gone for LA. They obviously keep jokingly referring to themselves as David versus Goliath. I think Paul is a little irked or just seeing the funny side of their ranking coming in. Whatever their ranking, I think they are overwhelming favourites here. I'll say it so you don't have to, Tim. They are overwhelming favourites for this final tomorrow.
Yeah, it's very hard to know whether Paul is ever being serious or not, or what's going on and whether he is actually annoyed. But if he is annoyed, he's not right to be annoyed because they were beaten at the last World Cup. So obviously the people who are seeding the crews need to take that into account. But whatever about their standing or seeding coming into this competition, they won the semi-final by country mile, let's put it that way. They got the fastest time, so there's no doubt they're the favourites tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, and who's their threat?
I think even threat is the wrong word. There's so much favourites, but I guess Switzerland and Italy both beat them in the last World Cup. Like, this event is a little bit, I think I said it to Van maybe yesterday or at some point anyway, that they've almost ruined the event a little bit because there are only three boats that have been medaling, or there are only three boats that will be in the medals, and I expect the gold medal is safe, touch wood. Switzerland and Italy will be fighting it out for that second. They're fighting for silver. It would be my read on it anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, competing and you knowing it's going to be your last Olympic race, you know, whether he continue on or whatever, you know, he has the medical career, but it does make you wonder, I'm not putting the medal on their neck. I mean, wherever they finish, you'd wonder, do these lads continue on racing when this stops being an Olympic class? You know, it must take some of the motivation away, it would seem to me. Would you think?
I would have said, if it was me or a lot of, probably, I won't say normal people, a lot of people who aren't like Paul, it would. But I genuinely think the lads love the sport. I mean, Paul is racing in the World Championships in the single in 3 weeks' time in Canada. So, I mean, the normal, certainly if it was me again, you'd be parting if you were, well, as you say, you haven't put the medal on their neck yet, they haven't won yet. But if you won the Olympics, you'd knock about 20 years of parting out of that. But Paul is coming home to Skibbe on Monday, as I believe, and then he'll train for the World Championships. So, to answer your question, I don't think so. I think they like rowing, they like the training, they like the lifestyle, and they're good enough to be competitive in the heavyweight class. So I think we'll see more of them in those crews, and it won't be a case of that they'll be trying to get into them. I think they're right up there to be the first and second man, or, you know, maybe not the first and second man. Darren, Phil would have something to say that about the sweep team, but they're definitely going to be competitive in the heavyweight class if they keep going, and I think and hope that they will.
Okay, looking at the other finals before the Paul and Fintan, they row at 2 minutes past 11. Before that, at 10:30 in the men's pair, you have Ross Carrigan and Nathan Timoney, who they have to be considered an outside chance of a medal, even if gold is probably That's already decided in this class, in your opinion, is it?
I wouldn't say it's already decided. If you look at the semi-final times, Croatia, who beat Ronan and Phil. So the Croatian, the Sinkovic brothers, are kind of famous brothers in the world of rowing now, and they're twins. And they've won the pair at the Olympics and they've won the double at the Olympics. So they're switching between both halves. And I think they have a silver medal from the quad and from the Olympics. So they're very versatile athletes.
They're trying to complete the set, are they?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, exactly. Yeah, they're up to, God knows what they're up to. But they're going to be up there for the goal. And the Romanians convincingly beat Ireland and Great Britain in the other semi-final. The Swiss are world champions. The Croatians beat them fairly well. So there's a lot of boats here. The Spanish beat the Irish in the heat. The Irish then beat the Spanish. You know, Great Britain were just ahead of us. Actually, I would have said coming into this that Great Britain would have been the favourites for the goal, but based on the semi-final times, it doesn't look like they were. So I'd say Croatia and Romania vying for gold. You'd have to say Great Britain are the favourites for a bronze, but Ireland has stepped on from the heat to the semi, and if they can step on the same amount again, you get the feeling that in the semi-final, if they maybe thought they could have beaten the British, and they'll have a chance now, and they might get them. So an outside chance of a bronze would be my read on it.
Okay, you know more about, well, current rowing than me as well, but the history of rowing. Is this a golden age of Romanian rowing? They seem to be popping up a lot in dispatches this week.
The Romanians are kind of not necessarily, like, over the years. I remember going back to Sydney, they have some class crews, and in fairness to them, they row very well. They're a little bit inconsistent sometimes, but whatever is going on here, they seem to be across the board doing very well in rowing anyway. I mean, that doubles win today was spectacular. They looked like machines coming into the line. You know, generally speaking, when you're coming into Olympic final, coming into the final stages of the Olympic final, you're going to be getting a bit ragged because it's just such a dogfight usually. But they didn't look like they were under a huge amount of pressure, you know.
No, they were the rowing equivalent of Forrest Gump. They almost had to be told to stop, I think. They'd still be going. They would have run aground if they hadn't been told to stop, I think. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal performance. Finally then, Margaret Creman and Aoife Casey in the double sculls. How do you assess their chances?
Similar to the men's pair, actually. Great Britain have been fairly dominant since the World Championships last year. Romania in the girls' semi-final were absolutely brilliant, rowing brilliantly. I had a few people talking to them after and they were saying, I love the way the Romanian double row. So I think it'll be Great Britain. It should be going to form. It should be Great Britain and Romania going for gold and silver. And then Ireland have an outside chance. I mean, obviously, you're always looking at it from the Irish perspective and saying, trying to kind of come up with all information you can or any detail you can to say they should get a medal. They're good enough to get a medal. You'd have to say they'd have an outside chance of it, but they do have a chance. They stepped on similar to the pair. They were a little bit better in the semi-final. Sorry, they were a good bit better in the semi-final than they were in the heat. And if they can make even a half of that jump again, that'll put them in a medal position. But as matters stand, you'd have to say New Zealand are the favourites for the bronze.
Well, okay. So if Ireland were to come away with, let's say the outside chances don't come through tomorrow, if we were to come away from this regatta with a gold and a bronze, do you think that's considered a solid performance from this squad?
Yes. I think, you know, going in, you would say you would have taken that. And obviously it's good. I mean, I suppose just looking from the medal tally compared to where the last Olympics, Tokyo, we got a gold and a bronze. So you might say, okay, well, we got a gold and bronze and we stepped on, but this time we have four boats in finals. So if you got a gold and a bronze and you had four finalist positions, you have to, if you're looking at the data objectively, you're going to say, okay, well, that was a better Olympics than the last Olympics. So I would say, yeah, even if the lads come away and do what they should do and we get two good solid races, it's progress from Tokyo. But a great day out, if everything went to plan, if you got a gold and two bronzes tomorrow even, it would be phenomenal, phenomenal altogether, yeah.
Oh my God, it would. It would be phenomenal. Well, look, we'll look forward to that. Just to fill people in on the rest of the day, Rory McIlroy is five behind Hideki Matsuyama in the golf, and Shane Lowry is eight back. As previously mentioned, the sailing We'll wait till tomorrow when hopefully the wind blows in Marseille. Tom Fannin is into a freestyle semi-final, which is probably taking place about now. And we have the show jumpers are in sixth place into the final tomorrow. Hockey team lost to Argentina, and Noel Hendrick failed to make the final of the K1 slalom. But as well as those rowing finals tomorrow, we have the start of the athletics. And earlier, I caught up with Jesse Barr just to preview that. So Jesse has joined me from Paris now to have a look ahead to the athletics, which begins on Friday in the Stade de France. The rugby sevens have been cleared out, and it's time for the athletics, which for some people whispered is the real start of the Olympics. I'm not one of those people.
You said
I
it,
say.
I didn't.
No, I didn't. I just for some people the Olympics is just synonymous. It's as if the Olympics is the second World Athletics Championships instead of something else. It is the main show for a lot of people. And let's be honest, for Ireland, Jesse, we go into it with some people who are, you know, maybe not gold medal contenders, but we have genuine medal contenders in some major events, which is not the norm for Ireland, shall we say.
Yeah, look, the athletics team we're sending is probably the strongest we've ever sent. And the biggest as a result of having two relay teams. So that just strengthens the numbers straight away. So yeah, it's a really exciting time for Irish athletics. I mean, across the board, you can't help but see the success and be kind of buoyed by that success. You know, there is that kind of thing that rising boats, rising tides raise all boats or whatever. I don't know the exact quote, but yeah, they'll be sitting there. They've come, a lot of them are in the village now. They've come from the training camp in Fontainebleau. There's a few of them still left, namely the women's 4x4 relay, who are not on for another week and a bit. Most of them have moved into the village. We've gotten the online tours of their rooms, and they're settling in and kind of getting some village life into them. A number of them have been to the track today, so they've got their first look at the Stade as an athletic stadium. All reports are that it's incredible. They're enjoying the purple, which is obviously highly unusual, a little bit controversial, but it is going to be iconic to Paris. Every picture, you'll always know that that's going to be them in the Paris Games in future. And yeah, by all means, I think they're happy and raring to go.
Is it a quote unquote fast track? I was asking Barry Murphy about this with the swimming, and he said, no, it's not a fast pool because it's not deep enough to be a fast pool.
I was obviously listening. I learned a lot from that.
Yeah. Obviously, it's a bit more technical with the athletics. But did I see that the company that installed the track kind of made some statement along the lines of this is the much faster, 10% faster track than Tokyo or something? Which to me, that sounds like marketing talk. What's the sense on the ground, to coin a pun?
Yeah, look, I read that. I think it was 2% faster. But I mean, how can they quantify that before anyone's even run on the track? Look, when it comes to like how fast a track is, a lot of athletes won't be able to say, and it's something I've kind of done a little bit of reading about, and I know Kyle Dennehy is probably your man to speak to. He is the athletics nerd, and he actually wrote a nice piece about it as well, kind of disputing that claim. But as an athlete, you just feel a track. You can get the feel for something and go, this feels fast. And usually it's a harder track, which is bodes well for sprinting, not so much for distance running. When it comes to this track in particular, what I've read about it is that they've got their layer of kind of the usual tartan, but underneath it is like a kind of like more of an aerated rubber, a kind of one that essentially has some extra give that it gives energy.
It's like a giant circular Nike Air Max.
Essentially, yeah, that's what they're saying. So they said they've made it that is going to be the fastest track. There's going to be the most energy. Because obviously the harder the track is, the less energy is given back. So that does take as well. So look, it remains to be seen. It's going to be exciting. I think there's going to be world records. And there'll be fast times, which is always exciting. So look, I'm just raring to go now. I'm buzzing.
Yeah, no, really looking forward to it. Yeah, for anyone who's unaware, Jesse, as well, being a former Olympian and 400-meter runner and 400-meter hurdler, is a performance psychologist or a sports head shrinker to the rest of us. How important is it? Like, you know, we've got four medals already, one gold. You know, we heard the rowers speaking yesterday about the boost that Daniel Whiffen's performance and Mona McSherry's performance in the pool has given them. Obviously, we've added Philip Doyle and Dara Lynch today. And obviously, Kelly Harrington has already secured a bronze, but we'll be hoping for more than that. it does, like, it does really seem to, that good feeling seems to disperse out through the team, through different disciplines, through different sports. It's a real boon, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, being part of a team, even if some of these athletes have never met each other, they're not even coming into contact, because rowing and sailing are, you know, obviously rowing or sailing is taking place currently, or is going to be taking place. By the time this goes out, we'll have a result, hopefully.
We're recording this after the abandoned medal race.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and we've won gold in sailing, this
yay,
is when.
Yay, another medal.
Yeah, we're not ignoring the achievements of Robert Dixon and Sean Monaghan, yeah, by any means.
We don't know yet. But, you know, these athletes like that in sailing and rowing, they're based outside of the village just because of the proximity, to be more in close for proximity to their venues. So they're not even in contact with each other in the village. But the one really nice thing about the Olympics that you don't get at the individual major championships is that real sense of team. There is this sense of Team Ireland, and everyone gets behind that. And there is that feeling of success breeds success. So, you know, first couple of days, we're getting positive results. Mona came home with her medal. Everyone kind of, I think, a sense of belief can be instilled with the rest of the team that, like, well, if she can do it, why can't I? She's Irish. Why can't I do it? And I think there is definitely a sense of belief that can be instilled, that, you know, we're not just here to make up numbers anymore. We actually really are here to perform as an Irish team.
Yeah. So let's look at it then tomorrow. We've got Andrew Coskren, Luke McCann and Cathal Doyle going in the 1500 metres.
Yes.
The blue ribbon event, you know, for some people, you know, the middle distance running, when we have a great, great tradition in. Andrew Coskren is Ireland's fastest man at this distance.
He is.
But for some people, perhaps not the greatest championship runner, you know, like, can you kind of explain a little bit about that, that why someone would be, you know, Andrew is, he's faster than Luke or Cathal, but some people would actually give Luke or Cathal an outside chance of going further than Andrew because of how they perform in championships. Can you kind of explain that?
Yeah, so with the 1500 meters, tactics are a huge part of it. You know, when it comes to championships, it is about not only being the fastest, but also the best tactician. And that's why you see someone like Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who is actually going to be in Andrew Coskren's heat tomorrow. He's in heat three with him. He is a expert tactician. He can win the race from anywhere in it, and he will kind of play with everybody to make it a race that suits him. And that's often what happens, is that tactics will come into it so much more than just raw speed. You know, where a lot of these athletes will have run their personal bests is in events where they'll have a pacemaker. So the pacemaker will be told what time they want to go through, up to probably 800 meters or 1,000 meters, 600 meters, depending on the race. So they have a much more controlled, much more standardized. Whereas when it's a championship, there is no pacemaker, and it's a bit of a free for all. And there can be a lot of slow tactical races where people are looking around. If they know they happen to be a good sprinter, they might want to slow it, or they might be someone who doesn't have a good sprint finish and they might want to take on the pace early. So yeah, look, Andrew, I don't think he's by no means a bad championship performer. Mm. He's made Olympic semifinals, he's made finals, he hasn't made a final yet, but he's been thereabouts, and he's absolutely good enough, just maybe had the wrong races. And actually that heat three that he's in, because Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who is by and far the fastest in the field, is in it, he actually has a more, I'm not going to say, I never like to use the word soft heat, because you come to the Olympics and I'm thinking of what Kelly Harrington said last night. There is no soft heat. There is no soft event. But he definitely has one where he is in the mix time-wise, because usually the fastest will often mean that they don't get the fastest heat, whereas Cathal and Luke have slightly faster heats. So yeah, it does come down to tactics and experience and being on championships. The more championships you have behind you, and that experience definitely boys well.
Isn't there a chance that Ingebrigtsen will just act the goat, though, which is, you know, kind of his style, you know, in the early rounds?
Absolutely. You just don't know what he's going to do. Was it at European Championships in one of the qualifying rounds? I think it was in the heats of the semi-finals, that he sat at the back by about 5 meters.
I think it was the semi, wasn't it?
Yeah. and just ran at the back and then just went past everybody. So he's someone you just can't pay attention to because his tactics are just completely unknown.
Yeah.
And obviously when it comes to the final of that race, it's going to be a head to head, the big head to head between himself and Josh Kerr, who beat him to that world championship gold last year. So there's a bit of a grudge match going on.
The two boys playing don't like each other.
Yeah. But what's exciting, I think, for the likes of all three lads, Andrew, Luke and Cathal, I think all three of them absolutely have an opportunity to get through. Top six get through to automatically to semi-final. But even if they don't make that top six, there's a new repechage round.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a new development for athletics, isn't it?
New for athletics. Really unusual. It's never been done before. But I suppose, you know, where you see it in rowing and you see it in other sports, it just gives people who maybe will come and do one round and never be seen again, it gives them that opportunity to have that second round. So there is a little bit of a safety net for Irish athletes who maybe, you know, qualifying into a semi-final might just seem like a big ask, to kind of have that second run and give themselves that next opportunity. So that's a really nice opportunity. But I think the lads, all three of them, you know, I would say they're all absolutely capable, but, you know, it is a hard ask. It is the Olympics and it is the blue ribbon event.
Is the semi-final, would you think, the ceiling for them? Or like, if they get into a semi, is there a chance, you know, things go right, you know, you get the race you want and you can make a final?
Look, it's hard to say. Andrew was one of the athletes who qualified by right with the automatic qualifying. Luke and Cathal were later call-ups. They got through on the ranking system, so they just would have had less time to prepare. Or to be in that like safe Olympic mindset that they're preparing for the games, they probably spent more time racing to try and get races in. So it's always interesting to see how those athletes perform. Luke has a lot of experience at this level. Cathal has less, but I think it's a really amazing opportunity to go out there with nothing to lose.
Yeah. Briefly then, a word on Luke's sister, Jodie, who's running in the 5,000 meters. Again, you know, very competitive. Very, very, very competitive event. Her first Olympics, am I right in saying?
First Olympics, yeah.
Yeah. So does she have a chance of progressing?
I think it'll be tough. But again, you know, you just never know what happens. Someone, you know, we have people who come out and pull out something out of the bag, you know, raise their level at this championships. Jodie's another, like her brother Luke, who got in on the ranking system. So again, just hasn't had the same amount of time to prepare. It was quite a late call up. But look, you just never know. Someone who gets on that level, runs with nothing to lose. A personal best for someone like Jodie on this stage would be incredible. For her to be here and to be in what's probably going to be a pretty historic event, which is the women's 5K. It's probably one of the races of the championships. You know, that it could be something really special. And, you know, if she was to run her best here, it'd be incredible. Qualifying through, difficult, but nothing's impossible.
Yeah. We have Eric Favours as well in the shot put, and you know, he's in good form. He's thrown his lifetime best this season, 20.93. The qualification standard is 21.35. So, you know, he's going to have the throw of his life if everybody manages, you know, if enough people, you know, if 12 people throw the qualification standard. So, it's great experience for him, but. Yeah. People shouldn't be looking at this saying, here's a medal hope. This is a stacked field, and it's a tall order.
Absolutely. I mean, the field events are so strong at the moment. Eric has been at this level before. He's been at World Championships. To make that step up into that top 12 in a field event is a huge ask, even for people who can throw over the qualifying. It's not just throwing your best, but throwing your best at the time you need to do it in three throws. They don't have the six throws either. So, you know, it'll be a big ask. Again, like I said, nothing.
It's so brutal, isn't it?
It's so brutal.
Like Olympics and you have three throws. It's cutthroat.
Yeah, it is cutthroat. You know, it's great for those who have the ability to throw over that in their first, they literally warm up, throw one throw and go home. But there, for a lot of people, that will be a big tall order. So again, Eric is someone who, you know, has been a strong part of this Irish team for, you know, for a good few years now at this stage, is our national record holder, and just an amazing experience for him to come to this games and just see what he can do in a games where they actually have supporters in the stand for once, that a lot of them haven't experienced yet.
Yeah. Look, we could sit here for an hour and discuss the entire Irish track and field team, but we haven't really got time for that. But so kind of focusing on who's out tomorrow, just to focus to mind. And obviously kind of the biggest news story is the mixed 400 meters relay team, which are in their semi-final tomorrow. Seven women and just two men. So we know for a fact your brother Tom Barr is going to be running. Himself and Chris O'Donnell have no choice. But obviously with seven women, there's only two from...
I will say there is a reserve there. Jack Rafferty is there as a reserve as well.
Okay. We know the two men running. Yeah. Obviously, after the phenomenal performances in the Europeans, everybody would love Rashid Adeleke to run. The word is, it's not confirmed yet, that the word is that she's not going to be lining out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is pretty obvious. On Monday, she runs in the 400 meter individual competition. So she's probably not going to jeopardize what she sees as a serious, a medal chance. You're a former 400 meter runner, Jesse. This guy here who can't run the length of himself, or can, but very slowly, is going to ask, Friday to Monday, what's the big difference? What's the big whoop? Could she not do both?
Yeah, look, it's a difficult... I would say I don't know the ins and outs, but I would say it wasn't an easy decision to come to, because I know Rashida really enjoyed running both at the World Relays at the Bahamas and then those European Championships, which we all remember so fondly. So to make a decision to opt out of a relay that I know she really enjoys won't have come easy. And I know her and her coach will have had their reasons for it. Look, there's not often that we have, if you have an opportunity of an individual medal, it is very difficult. And athletics is an individual sport at the end of the day. The relays are an additional. So I can see why she's probably had to prioritize her individual.
And her main rivals in the 400 meters. None of them will be running, will they? No.
That's the thing. And I think this is probably something that's been weighing on her mind. It was a comment that she made after the European Championships, was her legs felt heavy going into the day of the final. So she felt she had more in her legs, but she kind of wondered, did doing the relay rounds take from her eventual final? If that's your last experience at a championships, it will be very hard to look past that and say, oh no, I'll be fine this time around, even though you didn't feel ready when you did your last championships a month ago. And her main rivals, like you said, won't be lining up in the heats anyway, potentially in the final, but definitely they won't be lining up in the heats. So is she seeing that as putting herself at a disadvantage as a big medal hope and someone who has a lot of pressure on her shoulders? She is one of the poster girls of these games and definitely the poster girl of the athletics team. So, there's a lot of factors to consider. If she wants to put herself in the best position, this is obviously what she feels she needs to do. I know her teammates are very supportive of her. They are all understanding. If they were in a similar boat where they were all challenging for that top three position in individual events, they would all do the same. They are understanding, and they're a very good team to have around her.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's too many people out there who are going to find fault with this decision. As you say, athletics is primarily an individual sport.
Yeah.
She's recently enough turned professional herself and her coach. She said during the European Championships she hadn't tapered her training for the Europeans because her focus is the Olympics. So it would seem a little counterproductive to then sacrifice your European championships almost for the sake of the Olympics and then to run 3 days before. So I was playing devil's advocate with my question a few minutes ago. So I think it's understandable. But is it also possible that a team of Tom, Chris, and I presume Sophie Becker and Charlene Maudsley can get the job done and qualify for a final?
Absolutely. That before this year, Rashida hasn't been part of that team. And this Irish team has made finals at every major championship since the Olympics in 2021. And that has been without Rashida. So I think we need to be really clear that this is not a weak team without Rashida. She strengthens them, but they're still a very strong team. So absolutely, they have an absolute chance of getting into that final. There's no reason why, because they've still got a huge depth of talent in both the smaller men's pool and that bigger women's pool. So yeah, I think qualifying to the final is an absolute possibility and something they're well capable of when they all run their best. And I suppose, again, in relation to Rashida running, Rashida coming in doesn't guarantee us a medal either, and I think we need to kind of make that very clear as well, that, a European Championship gold is incredible, but that's only the European Championships. Yeah. It's not a world level championship. you bring in the Jamaicans, the US, the Dominican Republic, Nigeria, you know, those big hitters, we were never guaranteed a medal, Rashida or not. I was looking through the stats yesterday, and the time that we won the European Championships in and broke that European record, there's four teams who are actually faster bests than that. And two of them are in our heat tomorrow, the Dutch and the Dominican Republic. So it was never nailed on that we'd win a medal anyway. So I think it's just important to put that out there, that even if Rashida opts out, they are a strong team, but they're never, there's no guarantees with medals, especially in the relays. So look, would it be amazing if she does decide to run one of the legs in maybe the final? Absolutely, because it does just give us that extra something. But I think those four can definitely do the job and get them through tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic. And those heats are at 10 past six tomorrow. And you can watch those and the rest of the athletics, obviously, on RT2 and the RT Player. Coverage on RT Radio 1 and, of course, on the RT News app and RT Sport website. So thank you very much, Jesse. Before we go, I do have to, you know, today's interesting
fact of the day. So, I was wondering what it was going to be.
Well, it's not so much a fact. It's just it's admiration for somebody who's trying to do something that's only been done once before, and that's Stefan Hassan is going 5,000, 10,000 marathon treble. And I just love the quotes from her the other day. I can't tell you I'm going to get the gold medal in every event. It is very hard. There's an understatement. It's been done.
Understatement of the year.
It is. It has been done once by a man by the name of Emil Jatabek. To our Czech listeners. He did it in Helsinki. Remarkable, he won the 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters, and a marathon. He had never run a marathon before. He did it so in 1952 in Helsinki.
I was going to say, how far back are we talking here? Yeah, it's not modern times.
No, I don't care. It could be the year dot. That's still impressive. So he did it, and he was obviously a bit of a legend at home, but unfortunately, he joined the Communist Party, and he was on the side of the Communist Party that favoured democracy. So he fell out with the ruling part of the Communist Party, and he ended up pretty much in exile, like doing manual labour and stuff, and separated from his wife until, you know, quite late in his life. But then he was rehabilitated when, obviously, the Soviet Union fell and the Czechoslovakia gained independence. So an interesting life. And if Stefan Hassan can replicate that, fair play to her. But as she says herself, it's going to be hard. Jesse, thank you very much. We'll be talking to you during the athletics meet without a shadow of a doubt. So, and to everybody else, we will chat to you tomorrow. Good luck. Goodbye.